Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. The federal government is fully reopened, at least for the next 3 weeks, as congressional negotiators try to hash out a border security agreement. And while the shutdown's end has brought some relief from more than 800,000 federal and contract workers who'd been living without pay, the lasting effects have left many workers, such as Sacramento TSA agent Susan Braverman, distinctly pessimistic.
We don't know exactly when our paychecks are going to catch up. And then having another 3 weeks where we're worried about being in the same situation we're in now, it's demoralizing, it's unfair, it's cruel.
And it's not just federal workers, it's their families, their communities, the businesses that relied on them as well. So what are the lasting impacts of the shutdown on all of them? This hour on Point, the government is reopened. Now what? And you can join us. Did the government shutdown have an impact on your family? Are you concerned that the nation may end up in the same place in the next 3 weeks or just after 3 weeks? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Well, joining us first today from Washington is Ginger Gibson, national political correspondent for Reuters, who's been writing about the shutdown. Ginger, welcome back to the program.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
So I want to definitely talk in detail about the impact that the shutdown has had on so many federal workers and their families here. But first of all, let's just talk for a few minutes about the challenge that this bipartisan group of congressional negotiators has before them. I mean, how would you describe the challenge they have in terms of reaching a border security agreement that the president, you know, would be willing to sign?
One may say there is a wall ahead of them that could be difficult to scale. But I think that it's fair to say that this is a very difficult task that has been put before congressional negotiators. I think the last month has probably taught everyone a lesson, a reminder that you can't make big policy change through must-pass spending bills. It's just never been done. And as this time proved, it can't be done. It's too complicated to do on something that is mandatory like a spending bill. But if there is a way to get a deal on border security, this is the route. Having lawmakers do what their name entails, make laws, sit down bipartisan in a room and hammer out some kind of agreement. This is possibly the best chance they have to reach a deal if there is one to be reached in the short term.
Right. But here we have recently the president telling the Wall Street Journal that he thinks there's less than a 50-50% chance that they would reach an agreement that he would sign.
The president is sounding some realistic expectations, I think. This is not easy. Look at the comprehensive immigration bill that the United States Senate put together a few years ago. It took weeks and weeks of negotiations. There were starts and stops. And then after they finally got it passed out of the Senate on a bipartisan basis, it died in the House. This is not easy work. This is difficult work. And coming to big comprehensive agreements is not easy. It's there's a reason they're few and far between. Yeah.
Well, let's listen to a little bit of what some folks in Washington said over the weekend about this. Yesterday on CBS's Face the Nation, Maine Republican Senator Susan Collins was asked whether a wall will ultimately get funded in the next 3 weeks. And here's what she said.
I think what will happen is that the efforts to continue to build physical barriers, which have gone on in the last two administrations, will continue, but not to the degree that the president has requested. What we should do is to ask the experts, the nonpartisan experts at Customs and Border Patrol, what are their biggest problems? It's going to be a combination of physical barriers, technology, more Border Patrol agents, more immigration judges, more sensors. It's got to be an all-of-the-above approach.
That's Maine Republican Senator Susan Collins just yesterday. Ginger Gibson, I'm also thinking about how the president on Friday said, you know, he claimed that it's never been about a 2,000-mile concrete barrier. So, you know, it seems as if perhaps, you know, in President Trump's sort of cryptic way, perhaps he's leaving the door open for them to find some kind of some sort of agreement that he would sign.
That's right, Magna. The door he has repeatedly shut, insisting that it be a physical barrier wall, a concrete wall, as he said at his rallies, a big, beautiful wall, is coming back open. He's opening the door. And I think it's important to think about what the ramifications are for this. A wall is a pretty medieval solution to trying to close off a border. We're talking about drones, sensors, a really high-scale technology effort on the border that Democrats are saying wholeheartedly that they're behind. We could see a real technological revolution of border patrolling and border control that maybe has not been seen anywhere before.
Well, so we'll discuss more of this later in the hour about sort of the kind of agreement that maybe Democrats and Republicans would like to work towards. I think one thing that that I've been reading and hearing over the weekend is that perhaps save for the president, there seems to be universal agreement that they don't want to go back to another shutdown in 3 weeks. So perhaps there's good motivation there. But nevertheless, this was the longest government shutdown in U.S. history. It had an impact on not just those 800,000 federal workers, but so many contract workers who aren't guaranteed any kind of back pay that they lost, their families' businesses as well. I mean, first things first, do we have a sense as to when at least the federal employees are going to get their back pay?
When we were asking on Friday, lawmakers assured us that it would happen as quickly as they possibly could. We understood that to mean days. There's a lot of mechanisms required. And how's this for a complicating factor? Anybody who's ever received a lump sum payment from their employer knows that it can mess up the way they calculate your taxes. So I heard over the weekend from federal employees a lot of concern that they were going to essentially take a short-term pay cut because their withholdings would go up and they would have to wait until they filed a tax return a year from now to get some of that money back.
Wow. So Ginger Gibson, national political correspondent at Reuters, stand by here for just a second because we want to go to Ogden, Utah for a moment where Tyler Lathrop joins us. Tyler's an owner of a Good Life Cafe and Juice Bar, which is located on the same block as the town's federal building. About 5,000 federal employees who work for the IRS and the U.S. Forest Service work in that building in Ogden. Many of them were furloughed during the shutdown. And by the way, roughly a third of Ogden, Utah's annual revenue comes from sales taxes. And of course, that means they're highly dependent on those incomes of the federal employees there. Tyler Lathrop, welcome to On Point.
Hi there. Thank you.
So first of all, Tyler, tell us, how is it? What's the mood like, you know, at the Good Life Cafe in Ogden and generally in Ogden today as federal workers are going back to work?
Well, it's the beginning of the week since it happened, so we're optimistic it's going to be different than it was the past 35 days, but it has been very bleak. It's a ghost town. I'm looking outside my cafe door right now, and it used to be packed at breakfast and at lunch, and it's empty. So it's been a big, big struggle. It's hit the whole town very hard. It's hit our cafe very hard, and we're hoping it's going to be different now.
So tell me more about what happened to your cafe over the past 5 weeks.
The first week when the shutdown happened, I think people were still positive and on vacation mode, and it didn't seem like it was that different. And then every week since then, it dropped and it dropped and it dropped, and we are down now. This past week, we were down half of our sales. We were probably down 80% of our lunch base. We're a lunchtime cafe, so 80% of our lunch base is probably federal and forestry workers, and that completely changed. So we're all kind of just waiting to see what's going to happen this week and being optimistic, but I think people are preparing for it to happen again. So no one's going to be going out and spending money is how we kind of feel here, but like I said, we're hoping that that's not the case.
Yeah, no, I completely understand because there's so much uncertainty about what might happen in 3 weeks.
There is an absolute uncertainty, and so I opened up this place almost 2 years ago, and I love it. It's on an extremely charming street, historic 25th Street. We love it. We love this place. We love the town. I sold everything I had to move here and open, and there's a chance I could lose it, and it's for a cause that the majority of the country doesn't want, and that's been very upsetting.
Wow. Well, so Tyler, you were saying that you know, it's like a ghost town there in Ogden now, even today. Have you know, what have your colleagues, your customers, people that your neighbors, what have they been saying about how the past 5 weeks have been for them? I mean, because there's so many other people beyond the actual workers themselves who've suffered an impact from this shutdown.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's kind of two different types of people coming, the kind that are business owners, and we can talk about how it's affecting them and how they're hanging on and what they're doing, and the federal workers, and it's not good. Everyone's concerned and worried. And then there's another side where it's kind of interesting. People just aren't talking about it. You'll see people, and it's such a polarized topic, and it's such a divided topic that I think some people are just afraid to mention it. So sometimes I feel like there's an elephant just walking down Main Street, and everyone wants to talk about it, but they're nervous because you don't know what the other person's going to say and what side they're on. So then everyone's just kind of quiet. And in some ways, that's worse.
Right.
Wow. So that's been really interesting to see that happen.
Wow. And do you think that that sort of the community can recover from that and get a sense of being a whole community again?
Yeah, I'm optimistic, absolutely, for that. It's a small town. We tend to pull together. I think that we need to. As spring comes, it's going to get better and busier, and so yes, I think it's going to get better. Of course, we're all still very concerned. I think everyone was even concerned before the shutdown. So we're just all trying to be optimistic and hang in there and see what happens.
Well, Tyler Lathrop, stand by here for just a second because I want to hear a little bit more about how you've been holding your business together when we come back. Tyler Lathrop is owner of a Good Life Cafe and Juice Bar in Ogden, Utah. Ginger Gibson is also with us. She's national political correspondent at Reuters. She's been writing about the shutdown. And we want to hear from you. The federal government is fully reopened for now, at least for the next 3 weeks. How do you think the country should move forward? What kind of agreement would you like to see coming out of Washington? And if you're a federal worker or a contract worker, how are you moving forward? How hard is it going to be? This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about, yes, the reopening of the federal government, the full reopening of the federal government and the way forward now, especially for those hundreds of thousands of federal workers and contract workers as well, their families and the businesses that relied on them, and how they're getting by or how they can get by now that the nation's longest government shutdown is over, at least for now. We're speaking today with Ginger Gibson. She's national political correspondent at Reuters. And Tyler Lathrop also joins us. Tyler is owner of a Good Life Cafe and Juice Bar in Ogden, Utah, a city that is home to about 5,000 federal employees who work for the IRS and the U.S. Forest Service as well. And Tyler, I know I've got you just for a couple of more minutes, but I just wanted to ask you, you know, I've been reading and hearing over the weekend that so many federal workers and, you know, the businesses that relied on them, not only did they lose out on those paychecks, but there was this sort of domino effect, right? Having to take out loans at higher interests or worrying about if they could make their mortgage payments. They're potentially taking hits to their credit scores, or some even, especially contract workers, losing their health insurance. I was just wondering, if in your life and in your business, did you feel any of those domino effects?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's just kind of, it's rippled through the whole town. And it was kind of a double or triple whammy, because cafes are always slow in January after Christmas. So you kind of buckle down to get through it, and then this happens. So the little bit of money you were counting on to get through the slow season gets cut in half. So it's definitely hit everyone. And about the loans, I thought that was kind of interesting. How, I think it's Wilbur Ross made it sound like it was so easy for people to go out and get a loan. And I can tell you right now, I've had so many people call the cafe, put ads up, post on my social media, because somehow they found out that we possibly could need one. And if you call, the interest rates are really high. It's not something most people can do or want to do, and they're kind of taking advantage of the situation.
Oh, yeah.
So there is no interest-free loans out there or any help like that.
So, Tyler, forgive me for interrupting. Are these banks or individuals or private credit companies? Like, who's reaching out to you offering loans?
When I opened up my own bank account along the top, there's a little flag that says, if you need help with the shutdown, call us. And then besides that, on my social media, I've been hit by all kinds of business lenders from all over the country. And they're not banks. Some of them are banks. But then when you call and if you apply, the interest rates are incredibly high. You're supposed to pay back like within a month or two. So it's not really beneficial for a business at all.
Wow.
And it could get a lot of people in trouble if they take it.
Okay. Tyler, last question then. I mean, how long do you think it'll take for you, your business, to really fully recover here?
Oh, gosh. You know, I want to be optimistic. We're pretty positive here. But I would say it's going to take months. I would say that we're going to need, because we're kind of a spring-summer town, very outdoorsy, mountain climbing, river rafting. And we're going to have to wait for that to happen.
Yeah.
Because besides that, I think that it's going to stay kind of bleak. People are kind of buckling down, don't know what's going to happen. There's an uncertainty in the air. And I really hope that all changes. But that's how it feels right now. It doesn't feel any different than it did last week.
Yeah. Well, Tyler Lathrop, owner of a Good Life Cafe and Juice Bar in Ogden, Utah. Tyler, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Megan. I appreciate it.
Well, Ginger Gibson, let me turn back to you quickly. Does Tyler's story sort of echo a lot of what you've heard over the past several weeks from all the workers that you've been speaking with?
Absolutely. I think that there's real evidence that this shutdown affected not only people who work for the federal government or contract for the federal government, but the ripples through our economy are going to be great and lasting. Imagine your business, as Tyler has described, just didn't have a client base for an entire month. The city of Washington is feeling that. Downtown was a ghost town. Our commutes were empty, which if you were commuting was probably nice, but not if you like the sandwich shop on the corner and you want them to stay in business. I think it's going to take us a while to understand the impacts, and they will be lasting.
Well, Ginger, stand by here for a second, because I want to welcome into the conversation Jim Tankersley. He's joining us from Washington as well. He covers economic and tax policy for The New York Times. Been writing extensively about the shutdown as well. His latest story is, your 2019 tax refund might be higher, lower, or later than usual. We have a link to that at onpointradio.org. Jim, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, Jim, so give us your sense, your take here. We've now officially fully reopened the government for now, but how widespread are the effects, or will the effects of this shutdown be rippling through the economy?
Well, the good news is it's reopened, and just like Ginger was saying, it's people spending money again. If you weren't getting a paycheck for the last two paycheck cycles as a federal worker or a federal contractor, and now you're going to start getting paid again, I mean, that stops the bleeding of consumer spending in the economy. The big question is how much of it comes back, particularly since we don't know if we're going to have another shutdown again in 3 weeks. And so normally what economists would expect is that if you get back pay and you were sort of delaying, for example, buying a new car or even something smaller like a new microwave, that once you've paid off your debt and made yourself whole post-shutdown, you might go out and start buying those things again. Mm-hmm. But we don't know if that'll happen this time. And we also know that for businesses like Tyler's, you can't go back and like put people back in the seats of your restaurant 2 weeks ago. So that is some permanent loss to the economy, and particular to small businesses that cater to government employees.
Well, so tell us a little bit more about what you've been reporting on specifically regarding the IRS, right? Because some 46,000 employees were called back to work without pay, but many didn't show up. What's the sort of knock-on effect of that as tax season gets into high swing?
Well, this is a pretty vivid example for folks of, the fact that it's not just consumer spending that goes down when the government shut down. The government actually does things that contribute to the economy. And when they're not being done or not being done to the magnitude that we would otherwise have them done, that can hurt everybody, have ripple effects. And in this case, the IRS, we really don't know exactly how far along they are in being prepared for tax filing season, which opens today. And so all things go well, they can get all the back work done and processed, then refunds will go out on time. But they might not. They might be delayed. It might take a little while for the IRS to get back up to full speed. And if that's the case, then it might just take you a little while longer to get a tax refund this year if you file your taxes and are due some money back.
Well, and we should note also, obviously, as you remind us in your reporting, that this year we have the new tax overhaul to deal with as well. So a whole new set of rules and regulations around how people file.
It's basically the worst possible year to have a big staffing shortage going into filing season. I mean, we haven't had an overhaul like this in a long time. And it's changed things for filers. It's changed things for preparers. It's changed things for everybody, businesses. And so there's a lot of questions. People are going to be pretty confused and looking for help. And the good news is they'll be able to have a fully staffed IRS there to help them. The bad news is that IRS is behind the ball trying to get those changes sort of implemented and all the help that they can up online for folks.
Yeah. Well, let's go to the callers here because we are talking about the fact that the federal government is fully reopened for now. And that means those 800,000 federal workers are going back to work and hopefully sometime soon we'll get that back pay owed to them. We should also note, though, that federal contractors, the same guarantee is not made to them because they are contract workers. Want to hear from you if the shutdown had an impact on you directly or perhaps indirectly because you couldn't get the services that you needed from the federal government, say, from HUD or perhaps the Park Service as well? And how would you like to see Washington move forward now because we could be facing the same problem in the next 3 weeks? Let's go to Mitchell, who's calling from Des Moines, Iowa. Mitchell, you're on the air.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
So what would you like to say today?
So I just wanted to call in. I think that this whole government shutdown being, obviously much larger than record breaking is just further evidence that Donald Trump is unfit to be president. He's not an effective legislator. He can't get anything done. And additionally, what he doesn't understand in this is his wealthy cabinet members don't understand is that this is truly impacting people's lives. I'm not a contractor, but, not only the short term, there's not only short term consequences, but there are also long term consequences. And what the gentleman was saying earlier in terms of what the federal government's role is in economics anyway, is to provide stability. And then he has destabilized everything moving forward. And I fear that the economy is going to take this as a much larger impact than the initial short term.
Right. Well, Mitchell, thank you for your call. Ginger Gibson, you want to respond to Mitchell? That's interesting that the idea that the destabilizing effects could, keep the economy on edge even as the government still, is fully reopened.
You know, Mitchell, I just came back last week from your fine city talking to voters already as people begin to campaign in Iowa ahead of the 2020 elections. And I think that's one issue that we could see for the president going forward as he begins to make the case for his reelection is an economy that now may be hampered by this more than month long shutdown. The worst case scenario for the president's reelection campaign is to see the U.S. economy recess this year or next year. And I think that a combination of voters who already don't like the guy added to voters who then start to feel uncertain about the economy could be a real recipe for a problematic reelection for the president. So there is a huge risk politically for the president that this has lasting economic impacts. I'll say from a voter standpoint, I don't get the sense, having covered a lot of elections and a lot of shutdowns at this point, that voters particularly remember shutdowns on election day. The 13 shutdown didn't cause a political problem. But man, if the economy feels unstable, you don't need a shutdown to be reminded of to you. You feel it in your pockets.
Jim, what do you think?
Well, it's interesting. I think this uncertainty channel is absolutely what the long-term impact could really be felt in. There's actually an index that economists at Chicago and Stanford and Northwestern have built of policy uncertainty globally and in the United States. It tells us some things about growth and investment, and it's telling us right now that uncertainty has spiked to really high levels, some of the highest since the financial crisis. That's for a lot of reasons globally, but in the United States, it was definitely to do with the shutdown. And so if that stays elevated, because we don't know if the government's going to shut down again in 3 weeks, these are the sort of things that could affect business decisions to invest, to hire, and that could ripple its way through to growth. And so I think what Mitchell was really saying, this is the fear. Now, it's not for sure that it's going to happen. Business could shrug it off. They've shrugged off things like this before. But if they do, it's sort of a psychological effect that kind of talks down a recovery for no reason other than Washington has created this uncertainty.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about the continuing sources of that uncertainty, especially within the context of the next 3 weeks. So, for example, in an interview yesterday on ABC's This Week, Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff said that President Trump's willingness to make a deal on border security is limited by the influence that Schiff says Trump feels from conservative commentators.
Democrats and Republicans can not only reach an agreement on border security, we already have multiple times. In fact, we agreed on conference reports that would set out the funding for border security. We sent multiple bills, through each chamber with bipartisan support. The only thing that got in the way was the president was frightened off by Ann Coulter and Rush Limbaugh. And while we will negotiate amongst each other and with the White House, we're not about to negotiate with these conservative pundits.
So that's Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff yesterday. On Friday, Fox Business host Lou Dobbs spoke with former Trump aide Sebastian Gorka about the president's decision to sign a deal that temporarily reopened the government. Things got heated.
She has just whipped the president of the United States. And this
stop,
and then I'll let you finish. I'm an animated, energetic supporter of this president.
Yes.
But you've got to call it as it is. This president said it was going to be conditional border security, building that wall, and he just reversed himself. That's a victory for Nancy Pelosi.
That's Fox News business host Lou Dobbs on Friday. Ginger Gibson, how big of an influence is that dynamic?
I think that we can best look at this to realize that Congress negotiated an immigration compromise or has attempted to that is in line with traditional Republican ideology. The president is outside the norm or the mainstream of traditional Republican ideology. And so he basically doesn't have someone negotiating that's in line with his principles and policies in Congress. And that has been one of his biggest problems. When you see the commentators saying, no, that's not what we wanted, it's because they don't want the traditional Republican answer. They want something that's new and that that is more in line with the president. Now, look, I also think we're seeing a little bit of blame shifting and talking points by the Democrats who have found it to be really helpful to try to blame this on Fox News. But there is definitely an acknowledgement that the president and his sort of mainline Republicans in Congress are not on the same page.
Jim, what's your take on that?
I mean, I think we see this in the trade talks that the administration's involved with right now also. I mean, there is some theory of negotiation that says that you should not be predictable, that you need to be able to surprise the person at the table and that they will then – you know, go enter into better deals for you, the unpredictable one, because they want to just get things settled. The problem, though, is that if you are so unpredictable that no one knows whether they can take you at your word once you've negotiated a deal, then that reduces the ability to make a deal in the first place. I think that's what we've seen on immigration, and that's certainly what the Chinese have at least expressed is going on with the negotiations with China, where they don't want to shake on a deal unless they know the president has actually signed off on it, and there's always this worry that he could change his mind. So I think the unpredictability has helped the president get a couple of early trade deals. It has also, I think, hindered his negotiations, particularly with Congress.
Well, so we've got this interesting comment that came in online via Facebook from Jack C. Ruzak, who said, Trump did the only thing that was reasonable under the circumstances, but now both sides are accusing him of cowardliness and folding under fire. Ginger, what do you think about that?
I guess it is fair to say he's taking incoming from both sides. That is an accurate description. I would go back to the point I made before. Trying to do big policy, and look, a wall is not big policy, but Trump was making it the stand-in for his entire immigration policy. Trying to do big policy on a must-pass spending bill is really hard. It would be like trying to buy a house on your low-limit credit card. It just can't be done. It's too big and complicated. And so it's a lesson in legislative politics for the president, if perhaps nothing else.
Well, Ginger Gibson, national political correspondent for Reuters, and Jim Tankersley covers economic and tax policy for The New York Times. Both of you hang on here for just a second. Got to take a quick break. We're talking about the end, for now, of the partial government shutdown and what needs to happen next, and also that those ripple effects that the shutdown had across the economy in the lives of federal workers, contract workers, their families, their businesses, even cities that relied on that income. We want to know what you think about what should happen next and what your question is, or the answer to what now. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about the fact that the federal government is fully reopened, at least for now, for the next 3 weeks, and what needs to happen, not only with that bipartisan group of congressional negotiators who are trying to reach an agreement on border security that President Trump would be willing to sign, but also what needs to happen in the lives of federal employees and contract workers and their families and the businesses that they rely on those employees. And all the money and pay that they lost out on and the impact that that had on their lives over the past 5 weeks and the impact it's going to continue to have. Let's listen back to what House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said on Friday when the president agreed to reopen the government. The speaker said she was optimistic that lawmakers could reach a deal to help keep the government open after the next 3 weeks.
I see every challenge or every crisis as an opportunity to do the right thing for the American people, and at the same time make people aware of what the decisions are that we have here, and hopefully that will make everybody come together in a way that is unifying for our country.
That's House Speaker Nancy Pelosi on Friday. White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney spoke to CBS's Margaret Brennan yesterday about whether the president could shut down the government again.
Is the president really prepared to shut down the government again in 3 weeks?
Yeah, I think he actually is. Keep in mind, he's willing to do whatever it takes to secure the border. He does take this very seriously.
That's Acting Chief of Staff, White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney just yesterday. Let's go to the phones. John is calling from Baltimore, Maryland. John, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to say that I noticed that everybody's trying to beat Trump up. What if Nancy Pelosi would have held out just as long as he did, because he would have. She didn't give in. She didn't make any offers. She kept on saying no to everything. So she would have stood fast on her whatever stance or whatever you want to call it. And the people, when I go to the Wawa in the morning to get a cup of coffee, everybody in the Wawa that talks about this, Democrat or Republican, all they say is they think all these people should be fired. Hmm. They don't care about the country.
Yeah. Well, John, thank you for so much for your call. Ginger Gibson, national political correspondent at Reuters. Let me turn back to you there. I mean, I think John's saying that he sees, in his opinion, equal blame on both sides, that the Democrats, specifically House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, stood firm in her own willingness to fund any kind of wall over the past 5 weeks.
I think if you're a liberal, Nancy Pelosi proved to be the hero you didn't know you wanted. The response and praise for her last week was overwhelming. But if you're inclined to not like Nancy Pelosi, you're inclined to think that she should be punished for this. And furthermore, if you're inclined to not like all of them, you probably don't like all of them. I think in the long term, Pelosi probably fired up her base. And if you're voting in November of 2020, what are the chances you're going to vote for Donald Trump because you didn't like Nancy Pelosi? Probably minimal. It's hard to carry that argument forward. I think that from a political standpoint, especially a liberal base that's looking for a leader, looking for someone to fight Trump, Pelosi probably came out on top. And let's be clear, Nancy Pelosi is the best whip to work in Congress since LBJ. And anyone who didn't realize that before probably just got a nice lesson in that. She does legislative wrangling better than anyone at that job, period.
I mean, she managed to keep what could have potentially been a restive Democratic Party with a pretty vociferous freshman class in line.
She kept everyone in line. There wasn't any public griping. And this isn't the first time she kept everyone in line on the ACA, on the TARP, on the bailout, all through the last shutdown. Her skill set seems to often go unnoticed until a moment of crisis. But she is unrivaled in her ability to hold a caucus together.
Mm. Well, we've got more comments coming in online. On Facebook, Sarah Brown DeVost says, I'm thankful that Trump decided to put Americans' welfare ahead of his own. No matter how tenuous the deal, at least 800,000 families are able to pay their bills again. On Twitter, someone calling themselves the new JM says, anyone who has a, quote, desk job knows that coming back means piles of paper, hours of voicemail, missed deadlines, blown opportunities, new crises. Catching up to that never seems to end, and add to that a possible repeat. Well, let's go to Diane, who's calling from Kittery, Maine. Diane, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm calling because our town was impacted by the shutdown in a number of ways. We have over 300 Coast Guard service people, and the community rallied around these folks, but you really can't replace a paycheck. And there are lots of rules in the military about gifts and so forth. So, there was a campaign to get grocery cards, gift certificates, but we could only give one $20 gift certificate per Coast Guard person. We also have a brewery that had a shipment of fresh beer, and they were waiting on the federal brewers something or other that would allow them to cross state lines.
Mm-hmm.
They're not sure if they're going to get that permit. You know, it's something that they could put them under because it's a fresh product that needs to move. And finally, I just want to mention there's so many areas of the federal government that people really aren't even aware of. And in our town, we are trying to renovate our library, and we have been planning, we're hoping to apply for an infrastructure grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities. And it's a huge program. It's a matching program. That is all going to be delayed. I know they were going to release their new guidelines on February 15th. I'm sure they'll be behind.
Yeah.
During the shutdown, you could not even go to the website to review guidelines from previous applications so that you could kind of get started on the process. And it's, you know, a pretty involved process.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all kinds of ripple effects. And I'm really glad that the Democrats held together, because I agree with Nancy Pelosi that they can't use a shutdown as a bargaining chip, because it'll just happen again.
Well, Diane, I'm going to take it back from you there, and thank you so much for your call. That's Diane calling from Kittery, Maine. Jim Tankersley, let me turn back to you here, because Diane said a lot there, but one of the things that stays with me is she says, you know, she thinks that the shutdown has brought an awareness of all the things that the federal government does that perhaps people hadn't thought about before. She's pointing to the National Endowment for the Humanities, for example.
Well, sure. And I think on the one hand, we did not see perhaps every American touched by the shutdown, because it was only a partial shutdown, and because there are some people who don't truly see the effects of the federal government in their lives every day. But in particularly in towns that rely heavily on the Coast Guard or on other government workers, we definitely saw that. And you know, I think to unify what she was saying with the previous caller, there was this anger we saw in the polling that Americans felt in general. Everybody's negatives went up. The Democrats' negatives went up. The president's negatives went up. Mitch McConnell's negatives went up in the Senate, Republicans. And so, you know, it's not that much to expect politicians to solve problems and keep the trains running on time, so to speak. But that appears to be the frustration that a lot of Americans are feeling at Wawa's or wherever else. And we definitely are seeing that. And I think we'll see a mounting amount of that if this happens again in 3 weeks. Sort of like, hey, we just went through this. How are we doing this again? You guys have to figure this out. And so I think there's real danger here on both sides. If we end up in another shutdown, maybe there'll be different dynamics. The president was certainly hurt the most in the polling this time around. But, you know, the longer we, you know, continue to have dysfunctions of government, the more people turn to the types of outsider candidates like Donald Trump, who promise they can change things in Washington, even if those changes don't actually come to pass when they get in power.
You know, and there's interesting ways to see how the shutdown or what it actually cost, both we're talking politically, but also economically as well. We're seeing here on Twitter that Lisa Desjardins from the PBS NewsHour, she's tweeting that the U.S. economy lost $3 billion due to the shutdown and will never make it up. That's according to the Congressional Budget Office. Now, granted, that's $3 billion is really like a tiny part of the U.S.'s overall GDP, so probably not going to affect long-term growth. But another way to look at it is that $3 billion is just a little over half what the president wanted or wants for his border wall, for border security, Ginger Gibson. I mean, and that money is now gone from the U.S. economy.
That money is gone. I mean, we were talking earlier about if you were going to go buy a car, you're probably not going to go buy a car while you're looking at a potential shutdown 3 weeks from now. You might go buy a sandwich, but, you know, you've also spent the last 3 weeks packing your lunch at home, making your own sandwich. Maybe you do that for another 3 weeks. These are the impacts of a shutdown. It's not a simple matter of, oh, this is just a procedural move that has minimal impacts. It has real impacts, as the callers have said, on real people's lives. And I think that we get a little Washington punditry, and I am also a victim to do so when we start trying to guess who the voter is going to blame. I think that caller was right. The people in the Wawa are mad at everyone. I think Jim is right that's the kind of thing that makes voters say, I want someone who's outside of this crazy broken system. People are rational at the end of the day, and they're going to try to vote in their interest. And Washington starts to look more and more irrational. They're not going to be on board with anything they're doing.
Ginger, can we talk for a minute specifically about federal contract workers, right? Because they are not paid directly by the government, but by the businesses that contract with the government. There was some talk about trying to pass some legislation to support them, because there's no guarantee they'll ever get their lost pay.
they're often the most forgotten in this whole mess. If they don't show up to the federal agency that they're supporting, their company can't build the federal agency, and therefore they don't get paid. There was a lot of them that we heard in the last few weeks. Their bosses, their companies were paying them anyway, but not all of them. The small firms, and that's so many that support the federal government, weren't able to. So these are people who not only missed their pay, but they aren't going to get the back pay. And I heard from so many, even just my neighbors here in the greater Washington area, that they started looking for other jobs, that they spent this time putting their resumes together and applying for jobs that wouldn't be affected by a government shutdown. We talk about the long-term economic impacts. We also might be looking at a long-term brain drain from our federal government and from the support companies that provide contracted services, who say, I just can't wait around for the next shutdown. I'm going to go somewhere else.
Yeah, and I was reading a really moving story in the Washington Post about a contract worker whose company was doing work for the Department of Transportation. And because they lost all their income, the company ended her health insurance, and her husband has some very severe medical needs there. So that's going to cause long-term effects, negative, terrible impacts in their lives. Jim Tankersley, what do you think about those additional domino effects in the lives of contract workers?
I mean, I think that they are, just like Ginger said, the most vulnerable workers to permanent income losses from the shutdown. And it's important to note, we think about government contractors, and yeah, that's like people who work for defense contractors for sure. But that's also just janitors and food service workers and people who just do very low paid, relatively speaking, work. The difficult blue collar jobs of just keeping federal buildings running. And those folks often, you know, we know from statistics, just operate with much lower margins than people who are higher earners in the economy. And so I think in terms of disruption, Ginger's absolutely right. Like, they are the ones we should worry most about moving ahead here.
Well, let's go to Mike, who's calling from Decatur, Illinois. Mike, you're on the air.
Hello. I just have a quick comment because I know your time's running short. But I think the greatest travesty of this shutdown has been that the government didn't even recognize what I consider the fifth branch of the military and the first line of border defense, in that the Coast Guard didn't get paid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
other branches of the military did. Now, I don't have an association with the Coast Guard. I'm a military brat, and that was as far as my military career was to be, but I think it's a travesty, and I'll listen to your comments on off air.
Mike, actually, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Jana, who's calling from Milton, Missouri. Jana, you're on the air. You just heard caller Mike there saying he thought it was a travesty that the Coast Guard didn't get paid. What do you think, Jana?
What I think is that I love our president. I think that it is wonderful that he offered a reprieve to these people that lost their jobs there for the 2 to 3 weeks. But the 2 to 3 weeks is nothing like losing a loved one from the things that have come across our border over the years in terms of loss of life, which is everlasting. Everlasting.
Yeah. Jana, hang on for a second. 2 to 3 weeks meaning what? Because the government was shut down for about 5 weeks.
You're right.
Okay.
For the 5 weeks then, okay? But I love our president. And I don't think that it's weakness when a president maybe set his mind and yet he's willing to negotiate or offer that reprieve because he sees that people are hurting, and to let them go to another job, because I believe that the government will be shut down again. I don't know, you know, for sure. But it's not like they lost a child that they will, or a brother or whatever, that they will never, ever, ever, ever see again in this lifetime. And their lives are permanently altered.
Right. Well, Jana, thank you so much for your call. Ginger Gibson, we've got about a minute and a half left here. Again, through our callers, we're hearing that big diversity of opinion out there. But your final thought on this historic government shutdown and the next steps that Washington needs to take to move forward over the next couple of weeks?
I think it would be remiss not to point out that they aren't things coming across the border. They are people, many of who are coming here to try to find work. But I think that strikes at the heart of what we see this debate, there is just wide-ranging opinions on how to handle immigration. We should understand that they're people, not things. We should understand the motivations for their coming here. And we should understand that border security is very complicated and involves a range of technologies. And I think that we're going to see Congress at least attempt in the next 3 weeks to have a really comprehensive discussion that gets at really all of those points.
And Jim Tankersley, do you have a sense of optimism that the discussion will end in an agreement?
I don't, but I don't. I only know that from what I've read from fabulous work by my colleagues and others. I think in general, what most Americans are feeling right now is just a question. I think there's big uncertainty, and that uncertainty weighs on the economy, but it could be resolved. So I guess I'm hopeful that it will be.
Well, Jim Tankersley covers economic and tax policy for The New York Times. Jim, it was great to have you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
And Ginger Gibson, national political correspondent at Reuters. She's been writing extensively about the government shutdown. Ginger, it was great to have you. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And listeners, keep your comments and thoughts coming. You can go to our website, onpointradio.org, or find us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices, and they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons, and there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.